This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. On Monday, the 108th Congress returns for one final lame duck session with one last chance to approve intelligence reform. After the 9/11 Commission issued its recommendations last summer, the House and Senate approved different versions of the intelligence bill, and repeated attempts to come up with a compromise, a reconciliation, all failed. Most recently, a version approved by the President and the leadership of both parties in both houses of Congress was blocked by two important House committee chairmen. Both, of course, are Republicans, and their apparent ability to thwart their own leadership and the President led one Republican senator to charge that no matter what was said in public, the White House and the Pentagon were working behind the scenes to kill the bill. During his visit to Canada yesterday, President Bush insisted that he does want the bill to pass, so now sweeping changes to the country's intelligence services are caught up in a test of the President's power and credibility. Later in the program, the Justice Department's controversial efforts to get reporters to disclose confidential sources. But first, intelligence reform. Is it already past time to approve this bill, or do you think the next Congress should reconsider the whole package? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. A little bit later, we'll hear from one of the bill's critics and from Thomas Kane, the chairman of the 9/11 Commission. But joining us now is Congressman Pete Hoekstra, the Republican from Michigan, who's the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, also the chairman of the conference committee that's trying to reconcile the House and Senate versions of the intelligence bill. He joins us by phone from his office here in Washington. It's good to have you back on the program, Congressman.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be with you.
Thanks very much. You've said that you think this bill will pass on Monday. How come?
Well, I don't think I've said that. I'm not quite that positive yet. I'm hopeful that the Republican leadership and the Democratic leadership will decide that this bill should move and that we'll have an opportunity to vote on it next week. But I'm not quite as confident as maybe what you just said.
All right.
Okay.
Why do you think it has been so difficult? And tell us a little bit about the objections posed by those two important committee chairmen. And one of them is James Sensenbrenner, the Judiciary Committee.
Right. These are both good friends of mine. We've worked on a number of different issues together. I've got a great amount of respect for both of their opinions. Congressman Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin, who's chairman of the Judiciary Committee, we put together a comprehensive anti-terrorism bill in the House. We not only put together intelligence reform, we also put issues in there on border security, immigration reform, law enforcement, and those types of issues. The Senate really only dealt with intel reform. And what Congressman Sensenbrenner is saying, Pete, I really want these immigration issues to be dealt with in this bill, and until those things are in the bill, I'm not going to be supportive of the final product.
And he's saying that at least in part because he thinks that if considered on their own, they would never get through the U.S. Senate.
Well, I mean, that's one of the questions that we have here is exactly how much of this stuff would pass if it were not attached to an intelligence reform bill. Well, the Senate and the conference committee has been pretty adamant saying that we have not dealt with the immigration provisions that are in the House bill. They are not in the Senate bill. We don't want to negotiate on those items. So in the final agreement that we have with the Senate, we don't have much of what I think is good work that Congressman Sensenbrenner and the Judiciary Committee put forward. It's not part of the conference report. And that's problematic for my colleague from Wisconsin.
And then the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, Congressman Hunter, says this bill would endanger the security, the safety of troops because it would create the possibility of interference in the military chain of command and prevent a timely intelligence on any number of things from reaching commanders in the field.
Right. And Duncan's a good friend of mine, but this is one where he and I just disagree on the facts of what's in the bill and how things are done today. Today already, the director of the CIA has responsibility for what we call tasking, telling our satellites where to look and what information to gather. And so, in a time of war when our war fighters need certain type of information, they already go through the intelligence community to get their needs prioritized. And consistently, they are the number one priority for our intelligence gathering units, whether it's a satellite or whether it's some kind of an aerial drone whatever it may be. This bill does not change that, and so I don't think there's anything that this president or that the members of this conference would do that would endanger our war fighters. I think rather what we're doing is we're creating, and the intent is to create a more vibrant, a more active, and a more effective intelligence community, which we all know that we need. We all know that the current intelligence system is broken. And so as we create a better intelligence community, that's going to do more to protect our warfighters than doing nothing.
If you'd like to join our conversation, by the way, our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get Jack on the line. Jack's with us from Marin County in California.
Yeah, I'd just like to ask the guest what he thinks about the stalling of the intelligence bill and if that has to do anything with the Pentagon's dissatisfaction, because I know a sizable minority of their budget comes from it, their intelligence agencies, and giving money to their own Defense Department intelligence agencies.
Indeed, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff sent a letter that opposed the creation of a DNI, a Director of National Intelligence, who had control of the many of the Pentagon's intelligence agencies, Congressman Hoekstra.
Well, actually, he did. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff did write a letter not opposed to the creation of a Director of National Intelligence, but critical of one version of how the money would be allocated and the type of control that the Director of National Intelligence would have over the budget. Those concerns have been addressed, but you know, your caller asked, how much do I blame the Pentagon and those folks for the stalling of the bill? I put a tremendous amount of responsibility on Secretary Rumsfeld and others within the Pentagon for delaying this bill. The Secretary of Defense has been less than helpful in getting this done over the last couple of months. Even more recently, he's not been very helpful in making this happen. I think maybe in the last couple of days he's been more helpful, but he's not been helpful over the climate. But at the end of the day, it's not the Secretary of Defense's responsibility. This is now an issue for the House, for the Senate, and for the President to decide as to whether we are going to get this done now or whether we are going to limp along with the same broken intelligence community that we have and we're willing to limp along for maybe another year and a half until we can get this back on the front burner. I think we ought to get it done now.
Jack, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Have members of Congress, do you think, been given enough time to digest this large and important and sweeping reform? Is there a rush to pass it this year?
Well, actually, this is one of the complaints that came up a couple of weeks ago that said, hey, you finished negotiating the bill Friday night and we're voting on it on Saturday. Give us a chance to study the bill. Members have now had the last 2 weeks to study the bill. I think they will have had sufficient time to digest this bill. The ideas are not that new. They're not that complicated. We want to create really a chief executive officer for the intelligence community, someone who will put together the strategic direction, the strategic plan for what 15 different units of the intelligence community will do and how they will work together and how they will make sure that the warfighter and that policymakers have the best available information for them to make the kinds of decisions that that we need to make. So, that's not that complicated of an issue. And the other issue really is that we will create a national counterterrorism center, and we've already created smaller terrorism centers regionally around the country. And now what we want to do is we want one unified counterterrorism center that will look at it nationally, but it will also look at the threats internationally. So, and these are concepts that have been talked about for quite some time, and I think members can digest this over the period of time that we've given them.
Congressman Hoekstra, thank you very much for your time today. We appreciate it.
Hey, great. Thank you. Have a great day.
Pete Hoekstra, a Republican from Michigan, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, joined us by phone from his office here in Washington. And also with us now is Republican Congressman Roscoe Bartlett of Maryland, a member of the House Armed Services Committee. He was with us by phone from his car, and it's very good of you to join us today as well.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be on.
You, along with the chairman of your committee, Duncan Hunter, have said the 9/11 intelligence bill is a cure that's worse than the disease it's designed to treat. How come?
Well, that's exactly right, because what it does is to create the possibility, maybe even the probability, that real-time important sensitive intelligence information would not get to the warfighter. If you really look at who needs high-quality, real-time intelligence, it's the warfighter, and nobody but the warfighter. The Secretary of State could wait until tomorrow. There is nothing in deciding policy that has the great need for real time that the military has. And the way the bill is structured, it could very well deny intelligence to the warfighter just when he needs it most. And by the way, if the Secretary of Defense has not been helpful, that pleases me very much. I do not think being helpful in passing this bill is being helpful to the American country, and particularly to our warfighters. And it is not true that this was brought down by Duncan Hunter and by Jim Sensenbrenner. I went to that conference. I had no idea that they were going to say. They never encouraged any of us not to support it. They simply said that they personally could not support it. I didn't even know they were going to take that position until I got to the conference. But I went into the conference knowing that with what I knew, I couldn't support it. I can't speak to the other more than 100 members of our conference who had the same position I had, whether they developed that position after they went into the conference or whether they had that position going into the conference.
You're talking, of course, about a conference of Republican members of the House, and that's where the decision was made not to bring this bill to a vote on the floor of the House of Representatives.
That's correct.
Let's get another listener on the line now. This is Doug, who's with us from Minneapolis.
Hi. My question was, why are we having so many issues with the Pentagon and the Secretary of Defense when the Congress wants this bill passed, and it sounds like the President wants this bill passed? Can't the President just say, listen, send this to the floor right now. Quit messing around with this bill.
Well, you know, we did this bill very quickly. And I've now been 12 years in the Congress, and we are maybe very bright down there, although a lot of people doubt how bright we are. But no matter how bright we are, I don't think we can do an important bill of this magnitude this quickly. I think doing it right deserves the amount of time it takes to do it right, and I don't think we can do it right in this short amount of time. I really want to do it right, and I'm not sure that this bill does it right at all. We need more time to reflect on it, more time to debate it, and the 109th Congress will have plenty of time to do that.
Yeah, but the Congress is going to change quite a bit when it comes into the 109th Congress. Are you thinking that there's going to be a lot more chances for possibly a more conservative-type bill to come to the floor?
Well, I think the 109th Congress is a better Congress because we have more Republicans. I think it's going to be a more conservative conference, a more conservative Congress, and so, you know, I think that two good things will happen. One, I think that the mix of people looking at it will probably be at least as good, maybe a better mix than we have now, and we're going to have time to look at it. We really haven't had time to look at this. This is a very important decision. And look, the real reason we're pushing this is because we're concerned that if there's a terrorist attack and we haven't reorganized the intelligence community, we're going to be blamed for it. What the American people need to know is that whenever we reorganize the intelligence community, probably for a year after that, there's going to be considerable chaos and they're going to be less effective than they are now. So I'd like to put behind us this notion that we're inviting a terrorist attack by not reorganizing the Intelligence Committee. I want it done right, and I'm sure that after this roughly year of some chaos as we're pulling everything together, that will be better. But for at least a year, it's not going to be better. I'm not sure it will be good at all if we do it with the short amount of time we've had to look at it now.
Doug, thanks very much for the phone call.
Thanks.
And Congressman, thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you very much.
Roscoe Bartlett is a Republican from Maryland, a member of the House Armed Services Committee, and he joined us by phone from his car. When we get back from a short break, we'll continue our conversation about the stalled intelligence reform bill and take more of your calls and emails. Our number again is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, the email address, TOTN@NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the intelligence reform bill that is still bottled up in Congress. There's one last chance for this Congress to vote on it. That comes Monday in a lame duck session. Do you think it's time for this bill to pass, or should Congress stop and take a second look in the next Congress, starting in January. Of course, you're invited to join the conversation. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. About 10 minutes or so from now, we'll be joined by Thomas Kane, the chairman of the 9/11 Commission. With us now is Martin Cady, a reporter for Congressional Quarterly, who covers intelligence and homeland security issues. Nice of you to be back with us here in Studio 3A, Martin.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to both those congressmen speak. You wouldn't think they were both Republicans.
No. What's most interesting about this bill is that Democrats have very little to do with the gridlock on this bill. This really boils down to divisions among Republicans about how to go forward. You've heard the White House has endorsed the bill. A lot of key Republican leaders have endorsed the bill. But there's some very important committee chairmen who a lot of the rank-and-file members do listen to when they've raised concerns about this legislation.
Let me ask you something. We had a listener ask about the Pentagon working perhaps to stall this bill. Republican Congressman Hoekstra said they were, and the Republican Congressman Bartlett said they were, and that's a good thing, too. Yet this is also an issue about turf in Congress, is it not?
Well, yeah, there's certainly a turf issue here. The Pentagon controls 80% of the estimated $40 billion intelligence budget. And if you hand over some control to a new intelligence director, then the committees that oversee these budgets lose a little bit of power over the intelligence community.
Mm-hmm. So this is obviously important to Congress as well as to their consideration of whether it's good or not for the intelligence community and the country at large. How similar is the bill that, well, the one that did not get voted on, the last reconciled version? How similar to that is that to the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission?
It pretty closely tracks the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, but there's a lot of things that are not in there. The National Intelligence Director, or now they're calling it the Director of National Intelligence, does not have as many powers as the 9/11 Commission wanted. They wanted this intelligence czar to be able to set budgets and execute budgets and have pretty wide-ranging powers over the entire intelligence community. They also wanted to make the intelligence budget, part of the intelligence budget, public, and that's off the table now.
Mm-hmm. There are, obviously, we're talking about immigration. That was Mr. Sensenbrenner's concerns, and those are controversial issues. And intelligence restructuring, the concerns about the intelligence to battlefield intelligence, tactical intelligence is called. But there are a number of other important items in this bill that don't get all that much press.
No, and those things are largely agreed upon at this point. I mean, there's a lot of diplomacy items in this bill, aid to Afghanistan, more money for U.S. broadcasts to the Islamic world. There's social programs and scholarships, and this all falls under the rubric of winning the hearts and minds of the Islamic world. There's also a bunch of aviation security upgrades in there. There's a border security provision that would add 2,000 new border patrols along the southern and northern border.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email question from David Beecher in Syracuse, New York. While this is a cynical opinion, I do not believe Congress will ever fully reform this because there are too many egos, i.e. senators and representatives, involved. They do not want to lose their little fiefdoms. I guess that gets back to the turf war issue.
Yeah, I mean, committee oversight is a very important thing to these chairmen. Some of them spend 20 years on one committee to rise to a chairmanship. And once they have control over a significant chunk of the government, especially when you're talking about the armed services, they don't want to lose those pieces that they deem critical to their oversight.
Let me ask you a question about the speed with which this bill is being addressed. We heard Congressman Hoekstra say, look, you've had 2 weeks to read this bill. That's plenty of time. And Congressman Bartlett said, hey, this is important. We've got to take our How unusual is it for a two-week period to be available to read a big, important bill like this?
I mean, it sounds like plenty of time. I mean, Congress just passed the Omnibus Appropriations Bill, which is thousands of pages, and they had all of a couple hours to look at it and pass it, and that's the bill that funds the government.
And they have to come back on Monday to fix a part of it that they
did.
Sort of made a mistake about.
You're right. So they've had 2 weeks to read this, and they've also had months of debating these things, having hearings on them, negotiating the various provisions. I think people are pretty familiar with what's in this bill.
Mm-hmm. Let's get some listeners back in on the conversation, and we'll start with Lisa. Lisa's calling from Sacramento.
Hi. I'm just a little bit concerned. I haven't read the bill, but I'm concerned about having a political entity oversee the military budget and the effects that I want to know if there's anything in the bill to keep undue influence, you know, corporations influence political entities, and I like the idea of the military being separate. Is there anything to safeguard that?
Well, there is a provision in their bill that creates a privacy and civil liberties oversight officer. It's someone who's supposed to be sort of a watchdog to oversee the issues on privacy and civil liberties, how we carry out our law enforcement, how we conduct surveillance on people.
But
that's not really what I'm talking about. Just the idea of a political entity having the control of the military budget, it seems like a scary amount of influence. And
what do you mean by political entity? The Secretary of Defense is a political creature appointed by the President. He controls the military budget right now.
Yes and no. I think the military is really separated from the rest of the government, and that's been a really good thing, I think. And I just wonder how they're going to preserve that, or if they're going to. And I'm a little bit worried about that.
Well, I think part of the point of this bill and this intelligence overhaul is to bring in an outside civilian intelligence director who can take a different view, perhaps, than the folks inside the Pentagon on our strategic intelligence, how we carry out the war on terrorism.
Yeah, I can see why they came up with that. I'm just worried about maybe some of the unintended effects.
Mm-hmm. Lisa, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Here's an email question. This is from Craig. I'm concerned that this bill reorganization is not solving the problem with intelligence, but rather reshuffling a broken system. Where I feel the problem lies is that too many restrictions and regulations on what you can and can't do have been placed on the intelligence agencies. I think he means the Central Intelligence Agency here.
Well, there certainly are some limits. There's a lot of limits on what we can do domestically in terms of surveillance and spying. There's fewer limits on what the CIA can do overseas. And there aren't new provisions that would place limitations on what the intelligence community can do.
Mm-hmm. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Avram, who's with us from St. Louis.
Hi. I've been interested in what I'm hearing. As a Democrat, I find it very strange that I'm agreeing with the Republicans who feel that this particular bill should not go forward. Not for the same reasons, however. I feel intelligence goes far beyond how to fight a war. Intelligence is policy, and when we're at war, policy gets a higher priority. But I feel that we handled the war badly to begin with because 80% of the intelligence budget was in the hands of the Defense Department, and they were making foreign policy instead of foreign policy using defense as one of the instruments of our country's policy. I think we should take a look at all of our intelligence activities, get a few people that speak the language, and get them inside, and that intelligence goes both for making foreign policy from a political point of view as well as a military. Life is you can't ignore fighting, it's desperation, but life goes beyond the military and beyond defense.
Avram,
we have to go forward. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Avram. I wanted to say that the bill does talk about the importance of getting human spies back in the field. It stresses that, certainly the 9/11 Commission report stressed that very strongly, and that this the concern with the Pentagon was that there was over-reliance on technical means of finding out intelligence.
One of the goals of this bill is to try to ramp up the human intelligence, both domestically and overseas. But the purpose is to make sure there is, as the caller said, there is the consolidation of new authorities in one person who can set the strategic direction. And that's where the Pentagon is concerned, that they would lose some of those controls.
Mm-hmm. Well, joining us now is Thomas Kane, the chairman of the 9/11 Commission. He's also the president of Drew University, and he's with us by phone from his office there at the university. And it's good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Hey, thank you. It's nice to be back.
You've expressed some wonderment that bills supported, as I think you said, by the president, the vice president, the leadership of both parties in both houses of Congress, and 80% of the American people still seems to be stalled.
Well, you know, when you think of those figures, it does give you some optimism. I'm still optimistic because of those facts. You can't have a much stronger lobbyist working for you than the President of the United States.
Well, the question being, are you convinced that he is working for it?
Yes. This is a president who says what he means and means what he says. I mean, you can disagree with this president, and a number of people have very strongly, but I don't think anybody's doubted his word. I mean, when he says he's going to do something, he does it. And this president's been very forceful on a number of occasions, saying he wants this bill. And we met with the vice president a couple of days ago, and the vice president reiterated that, that the administration would like the bill.
Lee Hamilton, your co-chair, and others have said this is a very complicated, long bill brought to Congress relatively quickly. Why not give it another rethink next term?
Well, a lot of the things in it, you know, aren't so new. For instance, the director of national intelligence, which is one of the controversial parts of it, that's been proposed now for 30 years, starting with the Hoover Commission. And the intelligence committees of both houses proposed it. The Scowcroft Commission proposed it. We've been talking about some of these reforms a long time. We just haven't done them. And if we don't, going into this new era, 3 years after 9/11, if we don't put in place some counterterrorism strategy, and this is what this bill does, it establishes a framework for a counterterrorism strategy, then frankly we're not going to be as safe, and that's what we're trying to prevent.
Here's an email question we have from Charles Roberts in West Lynn, Oregon. Before the Iraq War, the military's intelligence, DIA, had a more realistic assessment of the situation than the civilian commissars of the CIA. Why is it a reform to give control over the nation's intelligence efforts to the folks who got it wrong?
No, this is not to give control to anybody. This is to have an overall direction so we have some control. Right now, if you ask any of the 15 agencies who's in charge, well, nominally, the head of the CIA is in charge. He's the chief intelligence officer for the country, but not really because he doesn't have any budget control. So there really isn't anybody in charge. And when you want to bring things together that don't get brought together, when you try to get agencies to work together, they don't necessarily share information. And the result is that, you know, we have either information that doesn't get together, the dots don't get connected, or you have groupthink, like you did in Iraq, where everybody gets together and says, of course the weapons of mass destruction, and you don't allow the dissenters to get in there. And this, we think the combination of a national director and the counterterrorism centers that will be created for this bill would solve both problems. You'd have some direction of intelligence, and you'd also, would we hope, get rid of this groupthink that you have now.
How does consolidation, bringing it all under one roof, reduce the possibility of groupthink? You think it might make it worse?
Because you've all got all these agencies now coming together and having a say. You don't have it just funneling up for one or two people. There'll be people in these centers from each of the agencies, and they'll been working together. If it's, for instance, if the Center on Nuclear Proliferation, which is one of the ones recommended in the bill, there will be groups from a number of the different agencies working together on that problem and bringing the information and expertise from those agencies to that issue. And then, of course, it goes up eventually to the president. But we haven't had anything like that before. We haven't had anything that's brought these agencies together to share information and talk with one another.
We're talking with Thomas Kane, the chairman of the 9/11 Commission, and with Martin Cady of Congressional Quarterly. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. Chris is with us from Fort Campbell in Kentucky.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
All right, I just got a question here, actually a concern. Recently, Porter Goss made statements about the...
Porter Goss, the new director of Central Intelligence.
Yeah.
Yes, that's correct. Concerning how intelligence will support the administration. And I was concerned about that because my question is regarding the new bill. How is this bill going to ensure the objectivity of intelligence in that the intelligence will not become policy or subject to policy, rather that intelligence is for its own sake? And this is very important, I think, to the quality of the information that we gather.
Well, we separated policy because we purposely did not make, for instance, the director of intelligence a member of the cabinet, because that's the cabinet's sort of policy-making position. This is not a policy-making position. This is an information-gathering position. Somebody else is going to make the policy. But,
right, but
this is somebody who's going to coordinate policy, however.
Certainly. But I'm just concerned that the direction that this new intelligence reform takes could cause agencies like the CIA or the FBI to give up intelligence that is not objective, but rather is subjective to a certain certain administration's policy, so that they're just getting the information that they want to hear.
Yeah, Martin Katie, let me put this to you. The politicization of intelligence is a long-running issue, and I guess the letter from Porter Goss is just the most recent example.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way you can guarantee when it comes to a political appointee that that person will be above politics or supporting policies that support the administration. But Governor Kaine is correct. This is not going to be a cabinet member. This is supposed to be sort of the top bureaucrat who is in charge of consolidating a strategic vision for intelligence, which is something they have been lacking.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the call, Chris.
Thank you very much.
And Governor Kaine, there is, as you know, a meeting that is to be held amongst the Republican leadership in Congress and of course, people from the White House as well this weekend. What do you hope will come out of that?
A bill, you know, and a vote. I mean, all we're really asking for is a vote on the bill on the floor. So we believe we have the votes. We recognize that there's some people who have some very sincere problems with the bill. One who thinks that the bill may be too tough and take some powers away from the Pentagon, which it does take some budgetary powers away. The other who thinks it's not tough enough and we should force the states to do some things in immigration. And those are two very powerful congressmen. I understand their ideas, but in the first case, we just don't believe that it will disrupt the chain of command at all, and neither does the commander-in-chief feel that it will disrupt the chain of command. And in the second case, you know, those additional immigration reforms could be put into a separate bill for next year. We don't believe it's worth holding up this whole bill, because, you see, we've been talking, you know, the interesting thing is we've been talking about intelligence, but what we keep on forgetting is that there's so much else in this bill. It's this, you know, reforms border security, we get thousands of border guards, customs immigration inspectors, thousands of bed spaces for detainees, terrorist travel information is shared, new strategy in transportation, aviation security, baggage screening, cargo screening, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, if you don't pass this bill, there's no substitute. It just doesn't happen.
Just before we go, we just have a few seconds left, Martin Katie. The procedure is there's going to be this meeting over the weekend, and then the House returns, the Congress returns on Monday?
Well, House Republicans have, GOP leaders have been meeting all week at a resort in southeastern Virginia. They're trying to figure out what to do with this bill. There may be a vote if they get an agreement over the weekend. There may be a vote Tuesday. Right now, we learned today that the White House is trying to negotiate directly with Duncan Hunter to try to create some legislative language that will push this bill over the goal line.
Mm-hmm. And the goal line in terms of the Speaker of the House is a majority of Republicans in the House need to be for it.
That's what he said. He wants a majority of the majority to be in favor of this bill before he brings it to the floor.
Obviously, stay tuned for developments as they come along. Governor Kaine, as always, thank you so much for being with us today.
Hey, thank you.
Thomas Kaine, chairman of the 9/11 Commission, also the president of Drew University, the former governor of New Jersey. He joined us by phone from his office at Drew. And Martin Katie of Congressional Quarterly, thanks, as always, for your time.
Thank you.
When we come back from a short break, we'll talk with Newsweek correspondent Michael Isikoff about government efforts to get reporters to name their confidential sources. I'm Neil Cohn, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.